Chat Seminar. My name is Sue Larkey, and my aim in the next 45 minutes is to give you lots of practical ideas. I know a number of you have joined me for previous live chats, so just for people who are new, I'm keen for you to get the most out of this call, so please print out the handout document, and I would recommend having a pen and highlighter ready to take notes as Gay and I discuss strategies. After the call, I will be online at Facebook to take your questions and for people to discuss key points together. This has been fantastic after the last few live chats and a great opportunity for people to actually answer each other's questions as much as me answering. If you haven't already friended me on Facebook, you'll need to do that to engage in the conversation. So maybe while the live chat's on, just take a moment to get on your Facebook and ask to friend Sue Larkey. That's S-U-E. L-A-R-K-E-Y. So tonight I am interviewing Gay Von Ess, who is a teacher like myself, and Gay and I have written a number of books together. Many of you will know the Early Years book, which is a green book, which was our first book we wrote together, and it's full of lots of practical teaching strategies and ideas. The second book we wrote is called Putting the Pieces Together, and we wrote this book because both Gay and myself as teachers constantly had people asking us how to talk to children about diagnosis, and we believe that's really important and that the pieces that need to be put together are sharing with the child, with their family, their peers, and that book's full of activities and ideas and ways to introduce autism spectrum and helping children understand that. And last year we wrote Developing Social Skills, and actually I was in Dubbo yesterday and a teacher came up to me and said that how fantastic the book was, and she's not just using that for children with autism spectrum but lots of kids who need support and help with their social skills. So I must say that always makes me very happy to hear the books are being used and making a difference. However, let's get on with our live chat for tonight. So welcome, Gay. I really appreciate you joining me tonight. Gay, I thought a good way to... Hi, Gay. Sorry, that little delay. Gay, I thought a good way to start off this chat would be to look at the four different styles of teaching we've discussed in both the Early Years book on page 7, for those of you that have that, and the Developing Social Skills on page 11. Gay, can you just talk us through the different ways of teaching kids that you work with?
Yeah. Well, as Sue says, there are those four different ways that I use, a direct teaching approach where I have something in my head that I want, an idea, a goal that I'm working towards, an engineered situation where I deliberately set something up. The incidental teaching I do a lot of, when something comes along that falls in with my goals, I will capitalize on that situation. And the activity-based instruction is when I have an activity like a cooking activity or hanging out clothes or something, and I'm aiming for a particular goal in that. And I thought I'd explain this more by talking about teaching the word more. More is a word that I certainly use a lot with very young children and who are just starting out on that journey of trying to get some words. So if I'm teaching more, with direct teaching, I would choose something that the child really likes, but that I can control and that is quickly dispensed with. Something like bubbles. Not his favorite or her favorite toy, because I'll never get it back. So I use bubbles, or you could use an M&M or a piece of a chip, whatever is going to motivate them. And then I sit there and hold the thing up or blow some bubbles and then wait for him to look in my direction. And then I teach, I say the word more, and I do the sign, which is an open hand, open right hand coming out from your chest, more. If I'm engineering a situation and I'm wanting to teach more, I would, for instance, deliberately only give the child a tiny amount of lunch. So say he'd normally have a sandwich, I might cut it up into quarters normally. I would only give him one quarter. I would not take the risk of cutting it up into sixteenths. in case he balked, and because it was different, he wouldn't have it. And I'd only give him a little bit, and then the moment I see him getting restless, I'd say, oh, more, want more, and produce more lunch. When I was teaching children in a educational group, these were children between 2 and 3 who we thought were on the autism spectrum, we would provide the snack for them simply because then I had control of what they were going to eat. And often it was tiny teddies or sultanas. And I would only ever give them two or three sultanas. So they had to ask for more. If I gave them a handful, I had lost the teaching situation. Teaching more incidentally, when you're spontaneously playing with your child, doing something without particularly having a goal in mind, use any opportunity that comes up to reinforce more. And then if your child is doing a cooking activity with you, or washing up, or waiting for a sandwich and you're putting some butter or marge on it or whatever, you can use more by only putting a tiny amount on. So it's obvious that you need to do more butter on the bread. Or hanging out socks, get the child to pass more sock. So you are using that word in a variety of different ways. Does that make sense, Sue?
Absolutely, Gay. And I think for me, I'm just looking here, I've been writing little notes down, that I think the two key things I think you said early on there that are really important for people with the direct teaching and even the engineering situations is not to use something they're far too passionate about, that they'll get, you know, worked up really fast, that it's not their favourite toy. It's just something they're interested in, motivated, but not going to have that anxiety and panic about if you take it away from them. And I think that's something that's really, really important. And also that with the engineered situations where you said, look, I wouldn't cut the sandwich up into tiny bits because you risk that because it's different, they freak out by that. So I think they're things that are really important for people to take away. And I guess you and I, having taught lots of kids, you sort of start to do that innately. But for many parents listening, you know, and particularly I know there's a number of parents listening tonight who have got new diagnosis, what you really need to do is set yourself and the child up for success, because if you start to get anxious, they'll pick up on that too. So it's just sort of making that, introducing the word more, what you've given examples where it's fun, it's stuff you're doing every day with them anyway, but you're making it a more specific goal and focusing on that for the kids.
Yes, and in that way, you know, everybody is actually working towards goals. It doesn't all have to be formal sit down and teach. If you can integrate teaching more or whatever it is into everyday life, you're doing intervention the whole time.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always think of, you know, the playground's a fantastic place for more swing, more slide, all those things that, you know, a lot of parents, they're already at the playground with a young child, so just adding that or more jumping on the trampoline. And if you find something the child is enjoying, just introducing that, even just, you know, saying more jumping and reinforcing that word in those activities, I think makes a huge difference. So thank you. I think that's an excellent example of how to do those four styles of teaching. And I know for teachers listening, it's the same. You're constantly trying to look for opportunities to teach, plus setting them up. So, you and I have worked with lots of kids on the spectrum, and along with using those range of teaching strategies, one of the things that I think you and I would know is one of the most important things is to get on the kids' wavelength and their way of thinking. Can you share with us some of the experiences you've had with getting on the kids' wavelength and understanding their way of experiencing the world and understanding things?
Yeah, sure. Well, firstly, I'd just, you know, like to say that, as we all know, people and children on the spectrum are concrete thinkers. And they also have difficulty inferring meaning in what we say. And when you start listening to what you say in English, often the meaning isn't very clear. So firstly, remember they're concrete thinkers. They have difficulty inferring meaning. The next thing I find is I don't rush the child, because it's a bit like any small child. If the adult comes in too hot and strong, the child backs off. And children with autism are exactly the same in this, maybe more so. You need just to take it slowly to get a connection. And if the child does something you don't expect, think back to what you've actually said. And often they are either reacting or doing exactly what you asked. And I'd like to give you an example of this. When I was teaching a group of six little boys, all with an autism diagnosis, in a primary school class, one of the children loved going on the aeroplanes, and he was going away for the weekend. And I said to him, when you go on the plane to Brisbane, are you going to sit next to Mummy? And this opened the biggest build-up to a meltdown, because he started screaming at me, no, no. And I thought, this is very odd, because he loves his mum. I'm sure he would sit next to her. So I tried, are you going to sit next to your sister? No, no, the same reaction, only getting more hyped up. And when I asked him if he was going to sit next to his father, he nearly went berserk, and he started screaming at me, in. And I thought, oh, my goodness. We don't go on aeroplanes in the literal sense. We go in them. But in English, we say, are you going on the aeroplane? You don't say, are you going in an aeroplane when you're going to Brisbane? And it was because I stopped long enough and listened to what he said that I could backtrack. And immediately I drew him a picture of the aeroplane and people sitting on the wing and put a great big cross through it and said to him, you know, no, in the aeroplane. And he calmed down. So it was a real wake-up call for me. Other examples, same group of children. I was trying to teach them the concept of before and after. You know, before we go out on the playground, you need to get your hat. After playtime, we need to wash our hands, or whatever it was. And this was in the days where I really hadn't quite twigged to how important the visuals were. And I was getting nowhere, so I started writing up before and after on the board. And one little boy came up and looked at before and said, no, no, and he grabbed the pen and he wrote a capital B and the numeral 4. And I thought, why not? B1, B2, bananas in pajamas, why not B4? And, you know, it was another example of getting on his wavelength, thinking how he thinks.
Absolutely, Gay. In fact, just this week I had a parent whose son was having a meltdown about his homework because the teacher had said for homework he needed to look, cover, write, check his spelling words.
Yeah.
And it hadn't included that his mum wanted to test him on the words, but there wasn't look, cover, write, check, learn or test. So she said, yeah, I have to test you because to check you've learnt the words. And he said, I don't need to learn the words. I only have to look, cover, write, check them. So his mum had to add learn and test for him to agree that she would do that. And that's where he's so literal. He was doing exactly what the teacher asked, but she hadn't included learning the words. So he just thought he looked, cover, write, checked, and I've done what I was asked to do. So, again, I think
which
this is what
he had.
Yeah.
And,
but,
you know, it was the inference that me didn't pick up on. I mean, the classic example, Sue, is when the teacher says to the class, pull up your socks, class.
Yeah.
The, you know, the young man at the back of the class looks down at his feet. He's wearing sandals. He puts his hand up. Please, sir, please, sir. And the teacher takes a deep breath and says, yes, Johnny. I'm thinking, what now, Johnny? And the teacher, Johnny says, "Tessa, I'm not wearing socks." Now, when I went to school, Johnny would have got into a lot of trouble for that. He would have been regarded as being cheeky. But, you know, if Johnny is on the spectrum and the teacher gets angry with him, what's Johnny learned? He did what the teacher, he couldn't do what the teacher asked, so he asked, he told the teacher he couldn't do it, and the teacher got cross with him. So, you know, he just becomes more and more confused.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I guess that links really well with why we wrote our social skills book, because so many kids on the spectrum miss those social cues and are so literal and miss the inferred meaning in social situations. So as adults, as you've just said, we can reflect on what we've said, but children who say, you know, I had a ball on the weekend, and this kid imagines they've got a bouncy ball and they meant they had fun, that's so hard for our kids to understand all that inferred meaning in social situations. And in our book, we've discussed that struggle, but I think one of the big struggles many of our kids have is to actually fix up, repair social situations and trying to understand that. So can you give us some examples in your experiences how you help kids with social skills?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the fix up and repair, they really struggle with. And particularly as often, they don't, you know, they may not realize they've made a social error in the first place. So one of the things I like to do is try and work on the hidden curriculum with children when they reach primary school age. You mm-hmm. do a little bit when they're younger, but it's mainly the primary age children that the curriculum is a little bit less obvious. It's the sort of stuff in the playground where the school may have a rule, no sticks bigger than your hand to be played with, or whatever the rule is. But we all know that the children play with sticks. So they're all playing with sticks. But then they see the teacher approaching. So the neurotypical children sort of evaporate and drop their sticks. And the child on the spectrum is left with a whole pile of sticks, totally oblivious that the teacher's coming and he's going to be caught out. And that's sort of hidden curriculum stuff. They also have issues about knowing when to tell things and what to tell. I mean, I remember, Sue, you were talking about them as the class policeman. And as then you went along with your talks, they graduated to being the Minister of Justice. And that's, you know, that's exactly what they do, because they do things black and white. And if the child is doing the wrong thing, another child, the child on the spectrum will very quickly point it out to the teacher and other children. And then they get the reputation of being dobbers, and other people don't like them. They don't understand the shades of grey. You find that too, I'm sure.
Absolutely, Gay. And I think in our book, one of the social stories and things that I use a lot in schools is that knowing when to tell. We've got that section on knowing when to tell, because the rules for a child who's five and just starting school, they're allowed to tell teachers in the playground all sorts of things. But by year two, the rules have changed significantly, and then by year six, and even by high school. So I had an incident of a boy dobbing on smokers. But the reality was, kids have been smoking behind that shed at the school for 30 years. It wasn't a new phenomenon. The principal had known about it forever. But this boy then got bullied because of his dobbing behaviour. And this is exactly what you're talking about with the hidden curriculum, the hidden rules in the playground and the social area. And this is why I believe strongly, I know you do too, Gay, that we've got to keep on going teaching social skills, because if we only teach them when they're little, the rules change. And the other one I love using, and I use a lot in our social skills book, is that white lies, knowing when to lie and when not to lie.
Yes. Because
so many of our kids get caught with that they're honest about people, or, you know, someone says, like, I think our example's in the book, you know, do you like my new shirt? And the kid with autism will say no, But really, that's an appropriate time to lie. And so many of our kids get very confused with that. And often in schools, they get in trouble because they tell the truth to their detriment. And
yes.
Other kids then isolate them.
Yeah. And I mean, again, that's where it's so difficult in what's acceptable in our culture. For instance, you know, we like to be told we've lost weight, but we don't want to be told we've put it on. You know, what's the difference? You know, why can
yeah.
you do one thing and not another? I mean, that's very much all part of that hidden curriculum stuff.
Absolutely.
And I remember when my group of six little boys met the new principal for the first time, one of them looked at him and said, "You have a long nose." And to help the situation along, somebody else said, "You have yellow teeth." And I wished to leave the school immediately. Fortunately, the principal joined in with my desires to teach them better behavior, and he had a range of ties, and I taught them to comment on somebody's tie. But I had to teach them that you only say positive things.
Yeah, and I think this is the really important part, Gay, that you have to teach it. These kids won't just spontaneously work out the playground rules. They won't work out white lies. They won't work out how to say positive things. And, you know, when we teach social skills, lots of people forget to back that up with the visuals. So, like, in our social stories skills book, I know that with knowing when to tell, one of the things we've recommended is you make a list when they do tell appropriate things, that you list it down for them. You actually have written down, here's appropriate things to tell. So you're reinforcing to the child visually, because so much social skills is just done as a verbal, and then it's
yes.
lost on many of the kids.
I think it's totally lost on them. I like to do it in a book, and they can refer back to it. And as they get older, you know, I'll make it into a discreet little notebook and, you know, name it something that appeals to the child, you know, secrets about the world or things I have discovered rather than social skills. Something boring like that, you know. A teenager does not want to be walking around with something like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Gay, when I might move on to talking about iPads, because I know when we were planning this chat, that was one of the things I personally was very keen to talk about, because more and more people are getting iPads and using iPads, and I know you're using them a lot in your teaching and in with family. So I know I've pre-asked you to just give us top 10 tips for using iPads. So I was hoping you can talk us through those tips and help people understand how to set up the iPads, because I think that's the key. If you get it set up right, then things
yes.
can move forward.
Yeah, okay. I think the iPad is a fantastic tool for everybody, but particularly for people on the spectrum. I mean, it's visual and it's electronic, and those two things seem to draw people on the spectrum like magnets, to it like a magnet.
Yeah.
I use it with children who are really very severely affected by their autism and can do very little, right through to children who are reading and writing and need help with the social stuff. I think even if you've bought the iPad deliberately for your child, this is my first tip.
Yeah.
The parents should refer to it as their iPad, because this makes it easier to control access. I mean, you know, you don't buy your child a car and then limit the number of hours a day he can play with his toy car. So the iPad is great, but like every other electronic thing, we don't want him on it 24/7. So call it yours, and then you are gracious and let him have time on it. The only exception to that would be if you've bought the iPad as a communication device for the child, because obviously then you need access to your communication system at all times.
Absolutely.
My second tip is don't put games on it. Use the iPad only for educational software. The children will hop to the games as quick as a wink if you don't make it an educational tool. If you want games, use them on your iPhone if you have one, on iPod Touch, or talk to grandparents about buying an iPod Touch for Christmas or whatever. My third point is, think about your child's IEP and choose apps that help complement that, because it's an ideal way of reinforcing school learning as well as providing opportunities for other sorts of learning. I found the mobile education store produces some wonderful apps, and one of them is called iConversation, and it gives the child a choice of three comments that they would make in this conversation. The child records it onto the iPad. The iPad comes back with an answer, and you can record the whole conversation and the face of the kids as they try and converse and hear their own voices coming back is just amazing. And this particular app will prompt the child if it picks the wrong comment to make by saying, oh, that's an unusual answer, and direct them to the more appropriate comments.
Gay, can you just repeat the... Sorry, can you repeat the name of that just if people miss that?
It's the Mobile Education Store, and the app is called iConversation.
If you put
that into Google, you will, there are a couple of really wonderful reviews up there. It doesn't take the place of conversation, but it gives the child an opportunity to practice and, you know, learn. And then you also do other conversations. So, if your child's at that point, it would be something I would recommend.
Sounds great.
I encourage people, this is number four, I encourage people to put put iTunes account on their main computer and download that way, and then just put a few apps at any one time on the iPad. Again, you have more control, and if you find your child is stimming on a particular app, lo and behold, it's disappeared. One of my families started by putting some videos on. They were traveling and the videos were useful, but they found that the child was only watching the videos. So suddenly they disappeared. And my fifth tip is, don't assume that just because the name autism appears in the title or the app is listed in the list of apps for autism, that it's a suitable app. It can be just a marketing tool. There is a series of apps called Look Me in the Eye. And what you do is look at the picture on the iPad, look at the eyes, and a number flashes up in the eyes. And then it disappears, and you have to remember it and mark it on the next page. Well, I don't think that's a suitable way of teaching eye contact. It might be a good way of a little bit of memory training, but you need to be sure that the app is doing what you want it to do. So really look for an app that has some flexibility in it, and hopefully one that you can modify, put your own words and things on it, your own voice. If you're trying to locate an app, you must have the exact title and spelling to get it through iTunes. And that can be very frustrating because, for instance, Train Tracks, the tracks is spelled T-R-A-X. So if you're not sure, Google it, and that'll give you the name. Then you can go into iTunes. My seventh comment, tip is, invest, if your child constantly moves out of one app into another and never actually concentrates on what's on in front of him, invest in something called Bub Caps. They're available over the internet from America. They're just tiny little sticky bits that you put over the home button, and it makes it much harder to press down. And it has opened a big door of relief in my world of teaching, because my iPad has heaps of apps on it, because I'm using it with a range of different children. And I had one or two who kept slipping out of it because they didn't want to work. They wanted to use a reward app. Once I've put the Bub Cap on, that solves that problem for me.
Excellent.
Tip number eight.
And, You know, I was just going to say, with those Bub Caps, Gay, I know I had a look at them, and they're very cheap to get from America, and the postage is really reasonable. So I'll make sure I put that website for people on the tip sheet. I'll send that through to them after.
Yeah, great. My next tip is take the iPad with you whenever you go anywhere, going visiting, to an appointment, going to a cafe, and produce it. It beats paper and pencils or a book, hands down. And I had a family tell me that they'd taken the iPad with them. They'd only had it a short time. They were going shopping. And there is a free app called Going Places, which is done by Model Me Kids. And it has a little social story of going shopping in the mall. And this little boy was not going to stay with the mum and was kicking up an enormous fuss. She pulled out the iPad, showed him this short little social story, and then he held her hand and walked through the rest of the mall willingly. So one of the issues with the writing apps and things with the children is that they use their fingers to do the app. But you can buy a stylus. And there is a very nice, chunky stylus suitable for younger children called AluPen. A-L-U, capital P-E-N. And it is a hexagonal shape, and it's really chunky. I buy mine from the Apple shop or online. Some of the other places that stock iPads, you know, Dick Smith, Big W, places like that, don't have this chunky one. They just have the thin one and the thin styluses. And I suppose my last tip here for a really top tip, if you have a very small child or you have a fairly active child or one who is liable to throw things, it is worth investing in a case called Survivor. This is produced by Griffin Technology, and I think was developed for use by the U.S. military, and it is said to be indestructible. And it certainly looks it. I've seen one or two.
Fantastic.
Because, you know, an iPad is not nothing, so you don't want to invest in it and find it broken 2 or 3 weeks later. So those are my top tips.
I think
I'll probably have 11 by tomorrow.
We'll keep adding, Gay, and I'll get them out to
yeah.
people. But I think they're a sensational place, and I'm just looking. We've sort of got 10 minutes left. The time's whizzing by, as we thought it would. One of the things, Gay, and I know a number of people have asked me, I sort of put on my Facebook, is there any questions that they wanted ask, people wanted asked tonight? A number of people were keen, as it's October and the end of year is approaching fast. I guess one of the things a lot of people are really keen about is that getting ready for 2012. And I know many of you have our early years book, and there is some information in there on selecting a school and preschool and transition, but I was thinking you're probably starting to get some kids ready for the end of year and transitioning even between teachers or from preschool to school. Could you maybe talk us through some of the key things that you're doing to prepare kids now to get ready for big transitions for next year?
Okay. I suppose one of the things that I like to do, Sue, is make it as visual as possible. So I try and do stuff in a scrapbook or a little book or photos. And if you have an iPad too, video, because you can just pick the iPad up and point it. And when you press the finish button, it's there ready for you to look at. It's really good if you can arrange to video and take still photos of the school itself. Because by now most people have decided which school, certainly here in the ACT, placements have been made. If the schools are usually fairly rigid about not having other children photographed, and one understands that. But even videoing, walking in the front door, this is the front desk, and you know whoever's sitting behind it, this is where I come when I need to bring a note or whatever, and then going down the corridor, videoing the classrooms, videoing the hall. So the child becomes familiar with the physical environs. And I always used to say here in the ACT, take the child to the playground over the school holidays so that they are familiar with the playground, with the proviso that, of course, you find out beforehand which playground is used by the kindergarten children, which equipment, etc., etc. But unfortunately, the ACT schools, lots of them are now being fenced and you can't get in after hours. So that rather blows that idea. So there's the preparation in the school itself. Some schools, most of them in Canberra, won't tell the parent who the teacher will be till the beginning of the school year. But again, get down there the day the teachers go back, find out who the teacher is going to be, and ideally take a photograph so that your child has, you know, some time to think about this.
Absolutely. And also, I think you and I, as teachers, would say, it also gives the teachers time to think about it. It gives the teachers
Absolutely.
Time to know. So if you take your children down on that day, it gets a picture in the teacher's head of who you are, who your child is. And as a teacher, it's as much about preparing your staff as it is about preparing the child. And I know it's one of the things you and I get a little bit worked up about, that really to, particularly if it's a teacher who hasn't experienced autism before, to put a child with autism or Asperger's in a class, teachers need time to prepare for that. They actually
Yes.
need some information, and you know, often what I like to do is reverse transition, where the teacher goes to the preschool to meet the child so they can meet them in a relaxed environment, whereas the child coming to them is a much more challenging proposition, and often they don't get to see the happy child engaging
Yes.
and what's working. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, exactly, Sue. But that, for
yeah.
some, you know, for parents is harder to organise.
Mm.
What families can do is prepare half a page of critical things about their child.
Yeah.
I say half a page because it would probably creep out to a page, but no more, because the teacher will not have time to read it all and remember it all. And it can also then be left in the roll and used when relief teachers are coming in. And on this sheet, I would be having, you know, obviously the child's name, if there's a particular name or nickname they respond to better, they need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
The things that are likely to upset the child, noise, smell, whatever it is, and things, signs perhaps that the child is starting to get upset. Maybe he starts humming loudly or whatever it is. So the teacher can tune into those things. And then very, very importantly, tips for calming the child. And often it is to stress to the teacher, please don't keep talking to him. Let him have a little bit of time to himself or a quiet corner in the classroom or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely, Gay. And in fact, on my website, on the tip sheets, there is a summary profile that has exactly those things, because you and I are often on the same wavelength, where it includes a photo of the child and some tips. And the other thing I've been finding really helpful is that wonderful book you put me on to, the 10 Things a Child with Autism I'm just off the top of my head. And what I find is parents could just write down the 10 things, you know, my child wishes you knew about them. And I find that book a really good prompt for the sorts of things to cover in those 10 key points. And for my secondary school kids, we're getting them to do that themselves, 10 things they want the teachers to know about them. And I think 10 things is more than enough for, for people.
Ellen Nussbaum, the author of that 10 Things Your Child Wishes You Knew, did a school equivalent.
Ah, okay. I'll
tell you
that.
About that later.
Okay, we'll do that. Sorry, guys, we're getting off track. And I'm looking at the time here. So, Gay, I might...
Can I just say one thing?
Yes, go, sorry.
I have a New South Wales child who is in country New South Wales, and their school takes the kindergarten children one day a week for the last 5-6 months of the year. And that little girl is doing wonderful transition.
Oh, my goodness, Gay. I don't think you should have said that. We're going to have all these people email going, which school? How come my school won't do it? So can we know what miracles made that happen, or it just happened to be a school that was a bit more open to that?
It's the school's idea. All the children go, not just my little mite.
Oh, wow. How fantastic. Mm. Wouldn't it be wonderful if all schools could do that? I mean, just for the parents too, knowing that they've got the right things happening. Oh,
yes.
Well, Gay, I think that's a wonderful note to finish on. So thank you for sharing and giving up your time this evening. I know you've had a very busy day and got a lot happening. So I really appreciate you for sharing that, and I'll get those 10, 11, how many iPad tips we ended up having out to people tomorrow. But thank you very much, and I'd just like to thank everyone for listening tonight and hope you found all that very helpful. I think there's been a lot of information. For many of you, you already know Gay and my books, but just a reminder that they're full of hundreds of more ideas to try. But just a particular note, for those of you with young children, I really want to sort of go back to what Gay and I were talking about when she was talking about teaching the child more earlier. That Gay and I would both think that it's really important you don't have too many goals, that you maybe just have one or two goals at a time. And in our book, we've very much set the book out where you can just choose your page, and then it's got ideas for different ways of teaching. So let's pretend we're teaching the child to sit on the floor, which is on page, I'm just looking here, 34. What I would recommend is that, you know, if you're teaching the child to sit on the floor, when they go to occupational therapy, get the OT to look at if the child needs any sensory supports for sitting. You know, do they need a wheat bag? Do they need a special cushion? Do they need sensory tools? What do they actually need to sit on the floor? Issues with crossing their legs and so forth? What's more comfortable? Then the child goes to speech. What communication are we going to use? Is it a visual? Is it a sign? How are we going to teach sitting on the floor? And then when they go to playgroup and preschool and at home. And I think if you just choose one goal and do it across all settings, that's really, you start to see more consistency for the child and it makes more sense. But if you take on too much, you can overwhelm the child and yourself. So I really would encourage you to take on one or two goals at a time. But for more ideas, have a look in the early years book. And the same with social skills. Just take on a couple of things and work on that over and over and over. Just for those of you that might be aware, we've got a fantastic special on at the moment. If you spend over $200 in Australia and $250 in New Zealand, you get the fantastic Temple Grandin DVD for free until December 21st. And if you haven't seen that video, please put it on your must-see list this year. It is not only an inspirational mother, but Temple's mother was advised to institutionalise her at a young age, but really an amazing story, and particularly shows her visual mind. And I know Gay and myself have both met Temple, and I think we'd both say that the video is a very good description of her, and, a fantastic. So I hope you've enjoyed the call. Gay, you've watched. Have you watched the video yet? I wasn't sure if you had.
Oh, I have. I think it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, it's not very often I read the books and knowing Temple and then watch the movie and enjoy it, but I found it was so like her. So everyone, I look forward to chatting you on Facebook now. And just a reminder to post your questions in the public area. And if any of you have specific questions for Gay, you might be best just to pop them through my website at www.suelarkey.com, and I'll forward those to Gay and get her to answer them if there's any specific questions I can't answer on her behalf, or I'll forward them to her. But don't forget to download those free tip sheets and that particularly that student profile for transition, and I'll get the tips for iPads up on my tip sheets tomorrow. And for those of you that have listened, we will send out the audio and tip sheets to you, particularly if you want to re-listen to this or pass it on to anyone else. It's a good opportunity. So, Gay, I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your evening. So thank you again.
My pleasure, Sue, and good luck to everybody out there with their beautiful children.
Oh, thanks, okay. Gay. It's a beautiful note to finish on. Thank you.
Bye.
Good night, Gay.
Bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. We had such expectations. We would.